Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Knowing is Half the Podcast. Ray started asking me questions, so I just figured we'd just start the show because...
Chan's drunk again, everybody. Chan is drunk on the show once again, and I'm wondering why he's doing it alone.
Drunk and Fat Albert.
Keep it real, though. If you've ever been drunk with Robert Clark Chan before, it's only a matter of time before the Fat Albert starts coming out of
it. We've been meaning to talk to you about it, Chan. It's really honestly becoming a problem.
It was charming until the allegations. You know what I'm saying?
Here's the thing. I went looking for New Year's specials. As we know, there are a lot fewer New Year's specials than there are Christmas specials, even or Halloween specials, or you know, like Thanksgiving specials. Even there's more than that. But I found a couple, and I was gonna go with I don't know, Winnie the Pooh. The Winnie's got one, but you know, we
just did a Winnie the Pooh, didn't we?
Yeah, we just did a Winnie the Pooh. So you know, I don't want to do that. And there was a PJs, which I don't think we've done on the show yet.
I don't know that we've done the PJs before. By the way, everybody, this is Knowing is Half the Podcast, the G.I. Joe recap show. I'm Ray Stakanis. That's Robert Clark Chan talking. And Gina Ippolito is here somewhere as well, yelling at us to get started.
I'm lost in the void.
Then I saw this thing, and it turns out that it's like a tradition in...
Yeah, the most played thing on television in Guinness World History.
What?
For reals? In Guinness World History?
Guinness Book of World Record History.
I know in Germany it's the most frequently repeated television program.
It says went on to become the most frequently repeated television program ever, according to the Guinness Book of World Records.
That is nuts. So sight unseen, I was like, well, shoot, we gotta do this. I mean, granted, it's a little step away from cartoons, but we've done some live action stuff before. And
is someone's child dying?
Are we just not going to talk about the literal torture happening behind Robert Clark Chan?
Oh, I don't know. I can't tell what's going on. I don't know.
I'm in the garage, so if you're hearing children on my end, something went real wrong.
I mean, I assume Luna has crawled onto the garage roof. Is peering in through your skylight and screaming at you, Daddy, why do you love podcasting more than me?
Two things. One, thank you, Gina, for thinking my garage has a skylight. Two, she already knows.
If I was also a podcast, would you love me, Daddy?
Gina is also throwing a lot of shade all these different ways when we all know that it's entirely possible that it's one of the 22-year-old boys she has in her basement.
You know what? Yeah, that's a great... You know what? Thank you, Robert Clark Chan.
Mm-hmm. And 9:30 on Thursdays or Tuesday nights, as it were. They have to keep their screaming to other hours and other days.
Although, if I remember Gina's dungeon setup, you know, it's very heavily soundproof. We wouldn't hear him.
Yeah, I'm not... What do you think? This is my first rodeo?
Thank you. But Chan, tell us more about this Guinness Book of World Records, please.
The Guinness Book of World Records. Thank you for already getting us confused.
Well, your two voices sound so similar. It's very easy to make that mistake. So basically, I got to tell the story here. Because let's just open it with the humble brag. Ray is buying a new house.
Ooh.
An upgrade house, everybody. Podcast money did it. Let's go.
Woo.
You two the don't
house
worry
cost $123. That's how much we make podcasting.
So I was out this afternoon, like doing all this measuring to make, you know, make sure things were going to fit in the new furnishings. I leave the house. I get home to my current house, and I see a whole text chain from Gina and Chan in our Knowing Is Half the Podcast Facebook Messenger thread. And yeah, and it's all just like, hey guys, should we do this? Should we do that? Should we do this? And Gina says, let's do the off the wall one that's in German. And everybody says, yes, let's do that. Oh, well, Ray didn't answer. So here I am watching it right before we get started. Here I am watching it before we get started saying, is this whole thing in German? What is happening? What am I even watching? Where did this come from?
I mean, here's the thing. Having now watched it, and I watched it roughly the same time as you. Mm-hmm. Still don't get it. I get it. I mean, like, I guess if you're German, watching this in English, it's the sort of thing that, you know, you're plowed out of your mind on a New Year's Eve. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. Let's go start another world war.
My goodness.
Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it is. This is what's keeping them from starting another world war. I mean, they started one in the teens, the 19 teens, started one in the 1930s, and this rolls around in the 1960s, about the time you would expect Germany to start another world war. They haven't since.
No. Guinness tells us.
So neither one of you liked this?
Like is a strong word.
You know what?
How I feel.
I appreciate it. I understand what it is. It's old timey theater television. Can I try my hand at explaining what is happening here?
It's a sketch. It's a 17-minute sketch. Let me tell you, it's a stronger sketch than what's been on SNL for the past 20 years. So,
oh my God.
Overly long.
Okay, two things. Well, no, one, you are correct. It is overly long. Two, I want to start a podcast just going through every episode of Saturday Night Live.
I know you
just
do.
To put lie to the lie that, oh, SNL hasn't been good since I was a kid. It's always been exactly the same. And everybody falls back on the old canard of like, oh, it's not good now. It was never good.
But Chan, it wasn't good in the 70s, but it was intellectual.
Not. Oh my God! Stop. Samurai fucking deli.
The vomitorium sketch. That is history book stuff.
It was good in the Tina Fey era with sketches like Mom Jeans and Woomba.
I didn't like those either.
Well, that's because you're a dude. Not everything has to be for you, Ray.
If it's not catered for me, Gina. Why do it?
Everything has to be two fat slices of pizza sumo wrestling at a football game with hot dogs in their mouths.
Is that a sketch they really did?
Hold on.
No.
This feels like
I'm ready. I was about to say they've turned it around.
This feels like a Gina fantasy to me.
Like Gina Fey.
No, I was putting together like what I thought Ray would captivated by.
Hold up, Gina Fey. We need to follow that thread.
Just saying that would be if Gina ran SNL, would be like a real Gina Fey situation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost there. I'm only about 65 years away from making it happen. Jesus.
Keep grinding, Gina. Grind mindset. Grind set. Let's go. So this sketch, and I'm sure there's like a historical something. I didn't read any Wikipedia about it.
No, then why are you doing the explanation for it?
Because I can explain what I saw at TV's Gene Ippolito. I can't explain the history behind
it. You spent the time watching it, chatting us, asking us what was going on. Yeah.
In that time, you could have actually found out what was going on.
No, well, okay. Hold on. Because the sketch itself is, you didn't actually need it to be. It helps that it was in English. I would have maybe figured it out had it stayed in German. The thing that was blowing my mind is I came into this sight unseen, no idea what I was going to watch. Gina, yep. First off, thank you for providing an original black and white YouTube clip of it. I think the colorized version just would have distracted me. I enjoy watching things in black and white, so I do appreciate you giving me the better option.
Well, it was in HD versus, because I watched most of it in the color version, and then along the side, I noticed, or when I was doing my Google research, because I am actually a good podcaster.
Wow. See that shade, Chan? Do you feel that?
I felt it.
Get dark in here. What's going on? Oof.
The higher def version was pulled up, and you can really see the dude's, the guy who plays James, his facial expressions, which are just gold. You can see them much better in the black and white version.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you can. I bet.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, that was fun. Oh, look, this is a, okay, we'll take out the 2 minutes of explanation because I start watching it and it's just a guy talking to a camera on a theater set for like 2 minutes in German. Mm-hmm. And I wrote here, like, I can't take notes. I don't know what he's saying. There are no subtitles.
What? Okay. So that's your, okay. Well, I didn't realize since I didn't watch the beginning of the black and white version. I mean, he's giving the context of what the sketch is.
But so he's doing it in a language I don't speak, TV's
Gina Polito. But there were subtitles on the version that Chan sent out.
I didn't watch that one because you gave me a better black and white. You know what? I rescind my thanks to you.
I mean, I would have assumed if you noticed that one version doesn't have subtitles for the first 2 minutes, you would check the other version.
Why would you ever do that?
Whining like a little bitch baby.
The assumption is that none of them would have subtitles if one of them doesn't.
That makes no sense.
If I'm watching a DVD of, say, Batman 1966 and disc one of season one has no subtitles in French, I'm going to assume all the other discs.
No, these aren't the same discs. These are two totally separate links and versions.
Yeah, this is like you buy the cheap ass $3 Walmart DVD of Mamma Mia, and then you go for the Steelbook Blu-ray DVD combo with the Movies Anywhere code. And that'll set you back a cool $41, but I tell you what, you can't put a price on high definition Mamma Mia.
Wait, here is my question, and the answer might enrage me. So there was context at the beginning of what was actually going on in the sketch. What was going on in the sketch, Ray?
Do I get my chance to explain what I think was going on in the sketch?
Oh boy!
If you do it in 2 seconds, in 2 sentences, because then I'm going to cut you off when you're wrong.
So, without the 2 minutes of actually being told what's happening, mm-hmm. which Gina got and I didn't, and somehow she thinks this is a fair starting point.
This is a run-on sentence, but you're still on sentence one.
Thank you. Robert Clark Chan, as I continue on.
That was two.
Now you've gone into three.
James is seemingly the butler of a widowed or, you know, never married older lady who is clearly the lord of the house, if you will. And she is of nobility of some kind, or at least is very, very, very rich. And this is, I guess this is New Year's Eve. Nothing says it's New Year's Eve.
You're already wrong. So
this is like a Christmas movie. You know how people say like, Die Hard's a Christmas movie. And then you're like, well, if Die Hard's a Christmas movie, then what else is a Christmas movie? Is like Chinatown a Christmas movie? I don't know.
Yeah. Ray is already wrong, but I'm going to let him make one more sentence just so I can see how many more things he gets wrong.
Yeah.
So there, two of them are in on what's happening in that she is at a dinner party that she is throwing in her own house. And there are four empty chairs seemingly held by four people that they personally know or have made up, except none of them are actually there. They are empty chairs. And he is playing the role of each of the four people as course after course gets served. Meanwhile, throughout the entire sketch, he's getting drunk because he's pouring a new alcoholic beverage for every seat. And as he's playing those characters, he's drinking the entirety, which is very funny. He's drinking the entirety of the glass of each of the four seats to her one. And they go through like four rounds of drinking. So by the end of it, he is plastered off his ass and can barely talk or move. And I found Look, I'm gonna say right now, the performance by James is phenomenal. This is theater acting. This is clown acting, if I may dare say, at its absolute best. This is one of the best performances I've ever seen.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean I totally get it.
I will fill in the blanks of what Ray missed by not doing his due diligence.
I didn't watch it in multiple places. What are you talking about?
If you turned on one and it's in a language you don't know with no subtitles, I think most people who aren't extremely lazy would just click on the other link.
I would assume they would put into a chat, hey, why doesn't this come with subtitles? And one of the other two people who know better could tell him to do that.
You mean when you're chatting that to us 10 minutes before we're supposed to start podcasting? Because that's when you waited to watch the episode. Okay. So
thank you for understanding, Gina.
The German introducer talking about that's introducing this sketch sets up that Miss Sophie, the lady of the house, is celebrating her 90th birthday.
Wow.
And so every year she has a dinner party with her four closest friends, but at this point she has outlived them all. Oh. So there's Sir Toby, Admiral Von Schneider, Mr. Pomeroy, and Mr. Winterbottom.
Great name.
Great, great names. Great sketch names. And since she has outlived them all, but still wants to celebrate her birthday, she makes her butler James impersonate them. So she still gets the experience. So Ray got the shades correct. But I will say as the only one who seemingly enjoyed this, as the only one here who's taught sketch multiple times at multiple places, This is a good sketch. This is a good character sketch. It has four distinct characters. The guy playing James is brilliant. It has a repeated action, repeated phrase. I guess apparently this phrase that is said between them, which is James is a little bit reluctant to play out certain parts. So he sort of keeps asking her. There's a couple of ongoing bits. Yes. But he says to her the same procedure as last year, Miss Sophie, because she's been doing this since her friends died. Who knows how long? And she replies the same procedure as every year, James. And I guess this is now a thing that they like that in England they'll work into like newscasts, this is a crazy thing. That from the Wikipedia page. So, in March 2023, King Charles III delivered a speech at a banquet during his state visit to Germany, and he raised a laugh by saying, in German, it is nice of you all not to have left me alone with a dinner for one. And then he also said that it wasn't a very, very good impression of modern Britain, I guess the actors were doing, but apparently they work this into like newspapers. They'll work into things like same procedure as every year, James. And whenever it's said, like Germans go crazy, they love it.
Is this like an original meme? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, this is proto Hasselhoff. Oh. This is like the Germans taking something and just running with it inexplicably, and the source culture being like, what's happening here? Why? Or it's like what Japan does to us, you know, they'll pull a, what is it? Mr. Sparkly.
Yeah. Mr. Sparkle.
This is KFC on Christmas Day.
But apparently, like it says, the phrase, it's become a very popular catchphrase in Germany. It's entered everyday vocabulary and is used in newspaper headlines and advertisements.
Wow.
its legacy is just bonkers. And the guy who wrote it, like, this is what he's known for. This is his whole legacy. Like, he was an actor and he was a writer, but his whole Wikipedia page is basically like, yeah, he was those things, but like this is why he's famous. Like this is why he's known, which I think is just great. I think it's great that he wrote one sketch.
Every comedy nerd's dream. I was about to say,
it truly is. But yeah, like there's this guy, like the physical comedy that this guy does as he gets drunker and drunker. Like there's like a couple of bits throughout. Like there's a tiger skin rug, mm-hmm. and he trips over the head of the rug several times. And right when it's like anymore, he keeps switching it up.
Hold on. He doesn't trip over it several times. He does it 11 times. that's not including the times he almost stops and then goes around or whatever. 11 times he trips on it, which is a lot.
It is a lot. The sketch is too long. It's too long. But what's in there is funny. So, and it's also funny that like, so he keeps tripping over it in the exact same way. Sometimes he gives it a look, which is always like funny.
The looks were funny.
But like one time he doesn't trip on it and he like looks back in shock. And by this point he's already like a little bit drunk. And this made me laugh. Like his face when he looks back. And then as he walks back, he trips over it. It's great. It's tripping over the ottoman. It's Dick Van Dyke tripping over the ottoman every time.
What makes this comfortable to an audience? And I could break it down a little bit. I know something about sketch, even though I haven't taught it as much as Gina and Bolito has.
Or at all. There we go.
I have taught sketch before, briefly.
Telling Luna why Bluey is funny doesn't count.
I don't need to tell Luna why Bluey is funny.
Yeah, you're right.
This is a sketch. This is a repetition sketch that essentially has about six bits and one catchphrase, and it just repeats the same six bits five times. That's why it's so long. It's doing a 2-minute sequence, but it does it five times, and then the more it stretches it out, the more that it goes. You know. And it has a big stretch out at the opening sequence is, I believe, a couple of minutes as well. So your bits are essentially, he is talking to the lady, and they do the same, you know, routine as last time, the same routine as always. It's time for us to serve, like, the first course. It's time for us to serve the salmon course. It's time for us to serve the chicken course. He goes, okay. He goes and he gets the food. He trips over the rug, the tiger skin rug, with the head that's, like, big head sticking up off the ground. Then he gets the food, brings it back around and gives it to her. And then she requests a wine or a beverage, an alcoholic beverage, a port, a sherry, whatever it is. He goes and he gets the thing again. And then he trips over the tiger head again a second time in the same rotation. And then he goes around, pours her the wine, pours all four steps of the wine, and then essentially mimics each of the four different characters playing their roles. The second guy is funny to me because he's a Viking who can only say skull. And then he clicks his heels together, which shatters his ankles every time, which is funny. So there's a different bit for each one of those four characters. And then they finish the loop, but it's not a loop. It's a spiral. I learned from Alan Wake too. And so then they go on to the next course. Then they go on to the next course. And then they finally end with a dessert course with fruit and a port. And then by then he is sloshed off his ass. The established beats and rhythms that he's done three times before get thrown completely off because he's so hammered. And then they go upstairs to fuck.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the end, especially for like the 60s, this is a fun end because he's been saying he's getting increasingly drunk. So he starts out by saying the same procedure as last year, Miss Sophie. She replies the same procedure as every year, James. It's very dry. But like by the end, he's just saying, so hammered that you can't even understand it. You understand what she's saying perfectly. So in the end, she says, I think I'll retire. And he goes, you're going to go to bed? Like really drunk. And he says the same procedure as last year, Miss Sophie. And she says the same procedure as every year, James. And she says it in a little saucy way. And then he basically says, I'll do my very best, and then like winks at the audience
and turns and winks at the camera. Yeah.
You know
what's going on.
And he comes back out one last time to sort of like wave and wink at the audience because it's, you know, it's a live thing. And it's all very fun, but like within the game of the sketch, the game being that he's becoming drunker and drunker as he's during this fake dinner party. Like every, you know, the first guy, she's making him pretend to be all the guests. So he's basically serving himself and playing the guests. So this first guest is Sir Toby. And he has this little back and forth where Sir Toby wants a little bit of extra in each drink that he pours. So the butler goes back and forth with like a little bit like, oh no, okay, okay, fine. And then pours a little bit more. And then after each of them, Miss Sophie like addresses them and she like as they toast. So she says, Sir Toby. And the first man is like very proper. And he's like, yes, Miss, you know. And then the second guy is the skull guy who shatters his ankles every time. The third guy has a very high sort of wimpy voice, which is funny. And you know, the fourth guy's name is Mr. Winterbottom, which that in and of itself is funny. And he's like, not by the end, he's like barely even making the booze into the glass. Yeah, there's just like, there's a lot of good stuff in here. It's just that it's too long, but like when he's super hammered at the end and he does that little perfect jump over the tiger head, like I really laughed at that.
Yeah, because he's super, super hammered. You assume he's going to fly over it, and he stops right at the tiger head and then double foot jumps over it with a big loud thud on the other side. Although the funniest is when he's bringing the chicken back, and he doesn't just trip over the tiger head. Just he launches the plate with the chicken on it up in the air, and I don't think it ever came down. It was an incredible bit.
He looks around for it and like grabs something else at some point. And you know, he's like, the way he like moves his body is great. Like at some point he goes right. He like shoots right past Miss Sophie and drunkenly up the stairs and then weaves back downstairs. It's like everything does go on too long. But it is there are five very funny minutes in this sketch.
And that's really my only beef because, yes, it is it is classic for a reason. It's very much in the vein of your who's on first, you know, of course, after the 60th time you've heard it, it's like, okay, all right, I get it. But like that first time, man, the first time I heard who's on first, I was like, oh my God, this is fucking unreal. These, and yeah, like the length of it. And I think we all at some point wrote our 12, 14 minute sketches because we had to get every joke in there and, you know.
No, I respect an audience too much, Chan.
No, it's because we start out by watching. I've taught many sketch students who bring in 10 page sketches and say, but that's how long SNL sketches are. And then I have to, explain to them that they have to fill airtime every week. And that sketches there cost money and that no theater in its right mind is going to let them put up a 10 minute sketch when they've got a 20 minute show.
Please have some respect for me. It's because I watched Monty Python.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is that like, the runtime is 18 minutes. It starts with that 2 minute introduction, which is like, it is way too long for a sketch, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And honestly, if I was watching this live, I would have been so captivated by this dude playing James that I would have been fucking delighted.
Well, also, it was originally done in 1934. It was, it was a London stage review. It eventually, you know, like moved to vaudeville. And in terms of, sort of like filling time, you know, like a clock burner, that's exactly what this is. And also, you get someone who's, you know, like a Freddie Frinton here, who just sort of chews up that scenery. It's like, okay, you know, like your thing is to go and pour this sherry four times, make it different every time. And then, okay, now you got to go do it again. But you have to heighten it. And, you know, I recall my own days of stage farce.
I mean, I did laugh out loud when the final round when he's pouring the port and he gets to the Viking guy's glass and he just essentially throws the bottle like sideways and just annihilates the table with it. I laughed.
Mean, it's also great. So just to run through the courses here, like the first one is mulligatawny soup, delicious, served with a very dry sherry. And those he pounds back like a champ. Like he's it's early, he drinks them all.
The first one's always easy.
four glasses of dry sherry. Then there's North Sea haddock, served with white wine, and by now he's a little tipsy. Then there's chicken, and she chooses to serve that with champagne. At this point, he's like, he's spilling it everywhere. He scoops the spilled champagne off the table into the glass and drinks it.
Dabs
a
little
bit
behind his ear.
Yes. It's little flourishes like that. And then the last one is fruit served with port wine. And he's so hammered at this point that the last person he's pretending to be grabs a vase on the table and drinks from that instead.
First plows the plants right into his face.
Yeah, and then you think he'd just set it down after he realizes it, but he takes the flowers out, drinks it, and then says, "Ooh, I'll kill that cat."
Yeah, he's mad at a cat. I laughed. You know, it was fine. I'm going to say this. When I was writing sketches back when I was doing it weekly and I was that guy, if I ever got to a fifth page on my sketch, I'd start being like, oh shit, this is like wrestling matches. When you're on the undercard and you hit the 10-minute mark and people are screaming, take it home. That's when I see the fifth page crop up on my sketch. I'm like, oh, better get to the pin. We got to get out of here.
Well, I was doing sketch for, it must have been 7 or 8 years before I went to UCB. And at that point, I took that first class and they're like, no, you cut that shit off. Five is too long. And I was like, oh.
Yes.
And so then I cut all my sketches down. I was like, oh, hey, look at that. That actually works.
It's funny. I always thought sketches, if you consider them like rock and roll music or songs or that kind of a deal.
Oh, wow.
Sketches should be like a They Might Be Giants album. 2 minutes and get out. Make your point and get out of town. Get off stage.
But here's the thing. I have the Wikipedia page open.
Do you have the Wikipedia page open, Ray?
No, of course not.
Ray doesn't even know what Wikipedia is. He doesn't know what the internet is.
Please, I'm here to react.
It basically says the comic premise of the skit, a man consuming multiple rounds of alcohol and becoming comically drunk, is generally credited to American actor Red Skelton, who included it in a vaudeville act in 1928. But one of the most famous versions of this is Lucille Ball in the Vita Vegemite, you know, when she's doing the commercial for that Vitamita Vegemin commercial, but she's drinking this cough syrup stuff and she's getting drunker and drunker. And that's the entire episode of I Love Lucy. Other than when she gets cast in the commercial, it's her just slowly getting drunk on this cough syrup like stuff and being unable to say her lines and drinking more and more of it. So it is something that I think can be sustained for more time than just the average sketch. And again, if I was seeing this live, because I was genuinely concerned for this dude at some point, he's throwing himself all over the place.
He's having trouble.
He does a fantastic job, you know, and even when he was sober, he was tripping over that tiger head, and then he's flailing up and down the stairs. He's singing to himself. He's throwing glasses all around. I'm concerned for this dude that he's going to get hurt. And that would hold my attention if I was watching it live.
I mean, back in college, we had done more than one farce.
And which more than one fart.
Yes, that's what I said. More than one farts. My thing was always, and because we did one that was just real small cast. It was two men, two women, and, you know, just a couple doing wacky things. And I just sort of got into a competition with the other guy, where I was telling him, you know what? I don't want laughs. I want to go so far that they don't just laugh. I want the audience to applaud when I do my fucking pratfalls. And so every night, once we got going, because then the director didn't really have much to say about it. And in fact, he basically threw up his hands because I would just make this scene go longer and longer, where I was getting my arm caught in like a windowsill or something like that. And I just got it bigger and bigger. I started slamming the thing down on my arm and like throwing myself around the room. It started as like a kind of grounded thing and then just went to crazy town. So like the idea of a comedian just sort of like taking the basic premise and just being like, oh, I'm getting a laugh. Well, we'll keep going. Keep going. I'm going to murder this.
I love it. I love it all. I mean, look, you know, this actually reminded me when I was in college, I did a lot of reading into and performing Christopher Durang plays. If you guys are familiar with that particular playwright, he wrote the Actor's Nightmare, among other things. He's written a lot of really good stuff for the people at home. But this particular thing had the energy of a one called Identity Crisis, which is one of my favorite one-act plays I got to do, where essentially the main character has four distinct personalities that he kind of just goes between through the entire weird play. And that's like, one of them is like a French, like romantic. One of them is a small child. I forget exactly all of them. I'll have to give that one another read because it's been a really long time. But I really sort of like that manic energy. And if people at home watched this and they're interested in like more of this kind of a thing, go seek out sort of the work of Christopher Durang. I don't know. Are you too familiar with him at all?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
College theater. Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, it's huge in college theaters. Look, I wanted to direct Sister Mary Kate Ignatius Explains It All to You. Mm-hmm. Sister Mary Ignatius Explains It All to You. I added Mary Kate because Ashley Olsen also was very popular.
Sure.
I was told at my Methodist affiliated university that I was not allowed to direct Sister Mary Ignatius Explains It All to You, for it is somewhat critical of religion. And they, as a Methodist affiliated school, as I actually got called, I went all the way to like the head of my department, who just passed away recently, Nils Reese, big respect. And he sat me down and he goes, Ray, here's the deal. We could do Sister Mary Ignatius Explains It All to You. The thing is, every single time any other religious affiliated institution tries to do Sister Mary Ignatius Explains It All to You, it goes very badly. So I have great respect for your desire to do this. I think it's a wonderful one-act play. I am really not okay with trying to do it here this time.
That's what Regional Theater is for, Ray. Go down the street.
I respect that. Go down the street. Go down the street to the cornfield. It's a very small school. So definitely, look, I used to like to push the envelope a lot. What can I tell you? Oh, boy.
Now anyway, you're confused about the envelope.
Am I supposed to lick it or get it? Yeah, what? Should I pee on this thing? What's going on?
The envelope has a lot of money in it, and you're pushing it to somebody to bribe them. Isn't that what that phrase means? Because I was trying to bribe my way through that.
I see.
Didn't work.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
For all my Hulkamaniacs that have stuck with me through the thick and thin, train, said their prayers, and eat their vitamins, be a survivor, man. Don't smoke, it's a joke.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
So, wow. Is this the shortest episode we've ever done? Do we have more we want to say about... This is tough. To do an entire episode about a 24-minute cartoon takes time. To do an entire hour-long episode about a 17-minute sketch?
You know, I like this. I think we're going out of 2023 on a high note. This is a little amuse-bouche for 2024. That's what it is.
Now I can see why Gina was so excited to do this and start early, is because she be packing. She's getting ready to get out of town, and she wants us done.
I mean, listen, it still took us 18 minutes to watch it.
I mean, that's fair.
I mean, yeah, we routinely do, four times the length of the show that we're watching?
Oh, sometimes more than that.
And this time we got it down to two. That's progress. Of a kind.
I do have a question. What is your favorite sketch? If you were to pick like your favorite sketch that you can remember. Or at least one of your favorite, maybe not your all time favorites, but one that you remember very fondly.
Out of all sketches?
Out of all sketches. I'm like, we all come from a world of sketch comedy. This is not a surprise to anyone involved, which means we had watched a shit ton of sketch comedy when we were much younger and older.
Yeah.
And it had an effect on us that caused us to eventually do a podcast where we talk about G.I. Joe and other things.
I can't say my favorite because my memory is bad and I'm sure it changes year to year, but I will say the one that I'll say two that for both very different reasons. The one that I always start like a basic sketch class with everyone watching it is the Key and Peele new hat sketch. Because it's just such a pure example of what a sketch is. It's basically the two of them trying to outdo each other with how new their hats are.
Okay.
So So one comes in with a new hat and the other one's super jealous. And this all takes place over a period of a minute. And then the next one comes in, his hat is so new that it still has a tag on it. The next one comes in and he's wearing a plastic bag with a hat on his head. And he looks over and the other one's got a woman at a sewing machine on top of his head sewing a hat. It's great. They're great. But
But
one of the most darkest sketches that I remember seeing that is just so creepy and not a favorite, but is like very memorable, is there was an old SNL sketch back when they were like still doing experimental shit that is just John Belushi as an old man at the graves of every other cast member.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And he's like going through them, like again, as an old man. And he's like, you all said I would be the first to die. And look at you, like Gilda. And he's like going through each of them that died. And first of all, he was the first one to die.
He was.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Second of all, a lot of them are also dead by the time I saw this sketch from terrible, terrible things.
Oh, boy.
And it's just such a weird, like, you know that someone in the room was like, it would just be funny to watch like Belushi eulogize people as an old man at the grave. And nothing about it is funny. It is just horrifying.
That's funny. Chan, what do you got?
I mean, a lot of them. I feel like one of the very earliest sketches that really set my tastes is Monty Python, probably the bird sketch, the parrot sketch.
Sure.
Or maybe the cheese shop, because I'm a really big fan of list sketches where we just come up with like more and more elaborate, you know, heightenings of specific things. There's actually a lot of stuff on that one State VHS skits and stickers.
Oh, that's one of the greatest hour-long videos in the history of VHS. Mm-hmm. I will say it. We all had it, I'm sure.
The taco sketch.
Yeah, I mean, I own it on DVD
thank
now.
Thank you for bringing up the taco sketch. That was actually on my list.
The one where Michael Ian Black is trying to get everybody to talk about themselves.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
There's something about the trying to be open and vulnerable and everybody, you know, taking him down. That's just like, and the meta commentary of it, which comes from, I think, my love of the Muppet Show. And I couldn't pick a specific sketch from there, but like so much of the Muppet Show is like built into my DNA.
I love that. Those are all great.
I really like Bologna Feet. I really like I'm going to dip my balls in it. Those are two of the first sketches I remember watching when I was little.
100% would have figured that Gina was a Louis guy.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but Louis crashing the Last Supper is maybe one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
He just wants to dip his balls in it.
What are you going to deny me? And what are you going to betray me?
The post-credits payoff of Jesus selling out Louis as the son of God to be crucified is chef's kiss. Real quick for me, the state with the tacos, Chan didn't get into detail, but essentially it's a very simple two-person sketch where the conflict is that the mailman has decided to stop delivering mail and start delivering tacos. And Michael Ian Black has come out to the mailman to confront him and say, but I need my mail because I need to pay my bills. And I don't want to lose my house. Yes, the mailman, however, mistakes this complaint for you don't like my tacos. And so they keep having two different arguments with each other back and forth.
Maybe the best tacos I've ever had. What if I had to choose between the tacos and getting the mail? I would have to choose the mail.
Hold on. What I'm hearing is you don't like the tacos. It ends with one of my favorite. I still quote this all the time when I don't know what to do. The greatest ending to a sketch maybe of all time, in that the man's wife comes out and says, did you get the mail situation sorted? He goes, I don't know, but that was the longest conversation I've ever had. Goodbye, mailbox. And the mailbox gets up and walks off camera.
Bye-bye.
Why?
Yeah, because the state loved ending their sketches with just weird non sequiturs.
It's great. And then I would say real quick, I would say the Porcupine Racetrack. I like musical numbers in my sketches. It's always been one of my favorite things of all time. I brought with me to Los Angeles is we got to put a musical number in there somewhere. I love it. I love writing lyrics.
Then why won't you sing with us on the podcast?
Every time I try, you shut me down. You stop it.
No one wants that.
Thank you.
They want me. They want Chan.
But just if you're at home, look up Porcupine Racetrack.
I'm watching you. Making your every move, baby.
The other two that made my list would be Key and Peele with the football player's name
because
sketch.
Your kiss.
Chan loves. Thank you, Gina. The Chan loves sketches where you just name off a bunch of stuff. That's a sketch where they just get silly and name off a bunch of stuff. And if you're in the right frame of mind for that sketch, you will lose your shit eventually. It's amazing. Also great when they did the follow up where the actual characters did a music video of East versus West. And then the hardest rapper on the team was Dan Smith, the white guy. Incredible. And then the last one, Kids in the Hall with the Citizen Kane sketch.
Ooh, this game's good.
You know, if you know it, you know it. It's where one guy is saying, I saw this movie with Orson Welles. Oh, it was probably Citizen Kane. No, he said Rosebud. And it's just them doing that for 3 minutes and the other guy getting intensely angry because it's so obviously Citizen Kane. He actually finds the newspaper listing of the day listed, shows him the channel, and shows it was Citizen Kane, and ends by stabbing him in the hand with a knife. Because he gets so intense.
You know what? I'll shout out Mr. Show, pre-taped Colin show, and the audition sketch, since no one said Mr. Show yet.
How do we not say Mr. Show?
I think it deserves some love, because they're the best at just those... Before the new guy, what's his name, was doing sketches where he just yelled and spiraled.
Well, you could be talking about anybody
on
right
Netflix. What's his
Tim Robinson.
Yeah, before he was doing sketches where he just Detroit yells and spirals, no one was doing it quite like Bob Odenkirk and...
My favorite Mr. Show still is the one where they're the heavy metal band who visits the fan who jumped into a vat of acid to try to impress them. And they find out they've got to like pay his medical bills. So they write an entire song called Try Again in hopes that he'll do it. I swear. Try again. Jump head first next time. Dive right in.
I am going to spite Gina, throw out an SNL sketch.
Oh boy.
Hey, I like SNL.
Job interview with Chevy Chase and Richard Pryor is one of the greatest sketches ever.
But aren't you proving my point if I said like, oh, SNL hasn't been all that great recently by picking an old, like if you wanted to stick it to me, you would have picked one from like last week and said, wow, this one's a classic.
Almost anything that Kate McKinnon is in.
Again, that's like 10 years ago. What are you talking about?
Including last week when she did Whiskers Are We with frickin' Billie Eilish.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ends up perving on her daughter, which is magical. Just magical.
You know what? I'm going to give it up for David S. Pumpkins.
You know what? Nothing wrong with that.
I love that sketch. I enjoy it. That's a relatively recent sketch.
Pretty new.
I mean,
in the last 10 years.
I enjoy it.
Yeah. I made Luna watch it, and she did not care for it. I think she thought it would be funnier to just hate it and stand in front of the TV so I couldn't watch it.
Oh, dang. Okay, here we go. Cecily Strong doing the clown sketch on Weekend Update.
Oh man. Yeah. That's depressing. A good one.
Oh, that is so good.
Man, that was hard to watch.
As a straight white dude, you didn't find that sketch. You found that sketch hard to watch, right?
I found it about as funny as Nanette.
Ooh, I see what you're doing here. You're trying to troll the two of us. Not gonna work.
Mm. Dang it, I just got blocked.
Just like Luna. We learned a trick from Luna.
That's right. Dang it. I've given away too much. No, old SNL, the vomitorium sketch, great. The Sodom and Gomorrah sketch, also great. We're the tourism board for Sodom and Gomorrah. How can we attract people here without, you know, talking about the sodomy? That's very funny. And then the superhero sketch. Come on. That's like the most famous old Saturday Night Live sketch way before the superhero boom. They put Garrett Morris as Ant-Man in our lives forever. And it was just one dumb superhero bit after another. And as a kid, that captivated me.
As a kid, I was really into In Living Color, but I can't bring up any of those sketches now because they're all problematic.
You can't watch In Living Color anymore. Oh my God.
I know, but I mean, like, I guess the least problematic was probably Homie the Clown, and that was one that I thought was hilarious.
He beats his girlfriends. You can't do
Homie. No, he's beating kids. Who cares?
But he's also beating women he's dating.
I think I blocked that part out.
When the girl asks him for a commitment and he's like, so you want Homie to stay at home and just be a one girl clown? Wham! I don't think so. Like, damn, dude. Domestic violence on my TV screen.
Well, she shouldn't have asked for a relationship then.
Oof. Gina, I don't know.
We were talking about problematic clowns that make us sad.
Yeah, Gina, when it comes to problematic clowns that make us sad, you've dated enough of them.
That's true. Yowza.
That's true. I thought we were talking about Damon Wayans as Kang. Isn't that what we're going to recast him?
Oh my God, we could. At least, you know what? They waited for the guilty verdict to come in. And then within 2 hours, the already pre-written press release hit the fax machines.
Oh no, they had long since in the internal documents canceled.
Yes. I feel like we've lost the audience at this point with all this inside baseball sketch talk.
Oh yeah, no.
I think the people who like us would like to hear about sketch comedy. I think that's true.
The people who were listening to this know sketch comedy. They know about the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
There are none of these references that are flying over their heads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe Homie D. Clown.
All of them, okay, 80% of them had the VHS copy of the state Skits and Stickers.
Even you missed the other part. The state remaining Skits and Stickers, asterisk.
Asterisk.
Stick and Sticks.
Stickers not included.
Stickers not included, yeah. Skits not included.
Also, I'm just going to shout out State by State with the State, which is a travel log.
It's a great book.
By the state, mm-hmm. And it is amazing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If for somehow you're sitting here and you don't know who MTV's The State sketch comedy group is, we're not going to tell you. Just go find out. Joy of my life was getting that four DVD set the first day it came out of every episode of The State.
Mm-hmm.
I know Gina has it too.
Mm-hmm. I also have all of Mr. Show on DVD as well.
I believe I do as well. I think so. Anyway, everybody, I hope you've enjoyed our walk through sketch comedy land. I told you we'd get this closer to an hour. I know how to extend a show. Anyway, this is Knowing is Half the Podcast. You can find us, of course, patreon.com/knowing is half the podcast. You could also, if you want to support the show that way. Otherwise, you can hit us up Facebook group, facebook.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. We are on Threads at knowingishalfthepodcast, Instagram at knowingishalfthepodcast, really no other social media sites. Gina will sometimes
people
see what
keep
she
tweeting
can see.
It Ray's active Twitter account. So
my Twitter account has not been active in weeks.
I am looking at it right now. It is very it much still active.
What have I tweeted?
I mean, you've liked shit and
I've gone on to check for my messages and I've liked like one or two things.
What do you think active means, Ray?
Posting.
Oh, God damn it.
Posting is active. Interacting with it is active.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.